Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy, the ball itself has its own energy, or life force, if you will. Its natural environment is in the home, so why don't you send them home?
It's Mike Shope.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
And the Bulldog.
That Happy Gilmore, he's a real crack up, isn't he? I mean, he's a hoot. You know, what was great today, one of his fans mooned me, and had Happy written on his ass. Ha on the one cheek, and then... sure enough, PPY right there in the other.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Happy learned how to putt. Uh-oh.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Just for this weekend, it's Captain Bulldog with the Ryder Cup in mind. Captain Bulldog. You will never hear the announcers refer to Keegan Bradley as Keegan Bradley this weekend. It's got to be Captain Bradley or else they'll be fired. Like when Gary McCord talked about how the Masters greens were bikini waxed.
Now I want to turn the sound on this Golf Channel panel that we're watching, just to hear if they all refer because he's I believe that is that's Keegan Bradley sitting right there, right?
Yes.
And
so
is that Luke Donald, the European captain?
Okay. Yes,
Captain Donald.
Captain Brian Koziol with us on the Wester Hotline. Brian is off to the Ryder Cup tonight. I'm guessing this isn't your first one, but it might be.
This is the first Ryder Cup that I will have
it
attended.
Is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. How cool.
I've gotten to three of the four major championships. In fact, lots of U.S. Opens and PGAs, but never a British Open, I guess, which makes, you know, travel sense-wise. But no, this will be my first Ryder Cup in person, so I'm excited and curious to see what spectating this event will look like.
Right. But you were at the U.S. Open when it was at Bethpage, right?
Yes, both of them. 02 Tiger, okay. 09 Glover. And I would say a long course to walk. I mean, I'm sure maybe people that are listening have played it, so they know what it's like. It's a course that is known for being tough. They have that famous sign on the mm-hmm. first tee that says only skilled golfers only for the black course. But yes, I have not been there for a Ryder Cup. From what I've been told from people that have gone there, is that spectating, while they said it's you know as good of an atmosphere as maybe you'd have at a sporting event. It's also can be challenging to spectate because, like, think about a crowd that was at Oak Hill for a major. It's about the same crowd. They're expecting maybe about 30,000 or so there. But at Oak Hill, there's two sets of groups on every hole spread out over 18 holes, and you've got spectators all over 18 holes. Whereas here, there's only four groups. So there's only golf on four holes. Now, you know, I'm sure that mm-hmm. it's going to be 20 and 30 deep. You know, if you really want to spectate, unless you strategically get ahead, but then you're waiting a while and not watching any golf. So that part of it, I guess, I'm just, you know, trying to figure out, like, what's going to be the best tactic to see the most golf swings at the end of the day.
How much, if at all, do you know, have they done things to this course for this event since you were last there? Or is it pretty much just it's already that hard and we don't really have to trick it up?
Yeah, so from what I've been reading from a lot of people that are there already is that the rough is down from what it was when the majors had played here. The PGA had been here also. That was a Koepka win. I want to say like late 2010s. Can't remember the year off my head. But the rough is down. Like it's not as thick, I should say.
Right.
So that they're also saying that right off the fairway, too, that it's not that penalizing. That usually the most penalizing is around the green. So I'm guessing that was on purpose. Chris, that the U.S. team tends to be a team that maybe wants to be a little bit more aggressive off the tee. They've got big bombers like DeChambeau, and thinking like, hey, if we're going to give our guys a chance to maybe, you know, flourish at what they do best, we want them to hit driver as much as possible. So I think that that might be a strategy that they're utilizing. Like, hey, why do we want to tighten the fairways and make this thick and play like a U.S. Open when we want DeChambeau to hit driver on every hole? We want Scheffler to go after on every hole, you know. So I think that's probably what is in line. The home team essentially has a say in course setup and, you know, like what tees they're going to, in terms of the tee box placement and the pin placements and all that sort of stuff, to try to strategically help their squad. So I know, you know, traditionally we've seen that when Europe hosts it, they like to tighten the fairways, turn it into more of a discipline sort of thing, because Europe thinks that they can play that game better than the U.S. team.
It's nice that that's so out in the open. Like, we all know this, that the home country or the home team can, you know, again, trick up the course in some way. Like, I think this happens in other sports, like in baseball. Sometimes they grow the infield grass in or something, but it's sort of like you're not supposed to know it. They wouldn't admit it, you know, like if the Yankees were playing a team that they just wanted to bunt all weekend or something, and they just, let's just not cut the grass.
Right.
But they would never admit it. Here, though, like, yeah, you know, this is what we're going for. I was wondering, so here it is a few minutes after 4, and they had been announcing that the pairings for tomorrow morning would be announced here on the Golf Channel that we're watching at 4, and I'm figuring it's going to be this long, drawn-out ceremony or something. No, the two captains are just sitting at the table, and they both read them off, Brian.
That's great.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean,
the one thing I noticed that I think is interesting about the Ryder Cup, and I don't know if I like it or I don't like it, is that it's blind. Like, Bradley doesn't, at least that's what it's been in the past, where, like, they just say, these are my four groups in this order. They don't necessarily know each other is doing at that point. So, you know, that's a piece of it, too, that it's blind. You really don't know what the other team is sending out first. I kind of wish maybe, you know, would it be better if they could go back and forth and say, oh, group one of the players is Scottie Scheffler, and then Europe can kind of huddle, like, all right, we want to put out Rahm against him, or should we save him for group two? You know, like, I don't know. But ultimately, yeah, you're right. They just throw out their lineup, and that's what it is.
You can give them each one mulligan with their lineup.
I learned that today for the first time, reading a story about how DeChambeau and McIlroy were both talking about how it would be, you know, cool, fun, whatever, if they squared off. And within that story, it was said what you guys just mentioned, that they just, you put your lineup in and you don't know, there's no matching that happens. And I never knew that until today.
I'm not sure. I would guess there are times when there's sort of like wink, wink, maybe for a singles match or something where like everybody, you know, wants a certain matchup for some reason and they just agree to do it, even though it's like not official. But yeah, I mean, most of the time it's like this. Well, McIlroy will not get DeChambeau tomorrow morning. I don't know about the afternoon, but DeChambeau and Justin Thomas are first off for the U.S. against Rahm and Hatton. So that's the first game. And foursomes means alternate shot, right? Like this, there's foursomes and then four ball in the afternoon.
That's correct. Foursomes is alternate shot, and then four ball. That means four balls are in play, and whichever of the two U.S. players has the better score on the hole, that was what counts, and obviously for Europe, the same way would follow. So yeah, I don't know why they don't just say alternate shot and best ball, but they try to make it a little more fancier, I guess. But yes, foursomes means alternate shot, and then in the afternoon, four ball means the better score counts, the best ball score counts for the afternoon. And normally, again, it seems as though the team that maybe has the more aggressive players would be thriving in that best ball. Like, I would think DeChambeau would be great in that format. You have a guy that's steady, that, you know, like, I know he's been trying to drive the first hole. For those that are familiar with Bethpage Black, the first hole, it's a hard dogleg right, and there's trees essentially blocking the dogleg. Well, he's trying to go over the entire thing, which sounds like a DeChambeau sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But, hey, if you're partnered with somebody that you know is going to be accurate, you're going to have them tee off first. Oh, look, you're right in the fairway. Great. Now I'm going to try to go over the trees and see if I can get all the way up by the green. So I tend to love that afternoon session a little bit more because you tend to get more aggressiveness and creativity and maybe more birdie action that can swing holes in terms of the overall score of the match.
Well, I guess it'll be interesting to see how they start then tomorrow. I saw odds on who would hit the first ball for the U.S., And it was a tweet about DeChambeau and how maybe somebody knew it would be him and the odds plummeted, like they were really high at one point. And so maybe people know that it's going to be him. He is in the first group. And so I guess to your point, Brian, they'll have to decide whether they want him to go for it on one. And if he misses, he leaves Justin Thomas in the trees or something to start the tournament. Yikes. Or, you know, they just sort of put one out there.
Yeah, I wonder. And also, too, there's definitely been, you know, research and them looking at the numbers of, okay, at the par threes, like, who do we want teeing off on the par threes? Because essentially with alternate shot, it's not necessarily who finishes the hole that right. starts the next one. It's Thomas will either hit on the evens or the odds to tee off, and then DeChambeau will do the other evens or the odds. So it doesn't matter who finishes the hole, especially because they give putts in match play. So they're doing some strategy of who do we want to hit on the threes, maybe who do we want to hit on the par fives, and then figure out, okay, you know, these two together end up having a good matchup, or, you know, maybe, hey, there's a really, really difficult approach shot on this hole. Is somebody better with their longer irons or something like that? So I'm sure all the numbers they've crunched and they've tried to figure out maybe who plays better with who in terms of that setup. So, yeah, Thomas, I'm seeing Thomas and DeChambeau. I mean, it's two fiery names for the U.S. to go out right away with, and they're facing Rahm and Hatton. That's also a pretty fiery group for Europe. So early fireworks on hole one to start tomorrow morning bright and early. I love it.
I'd shoot 5-under with DeChambeau in four ball, I think. We would shoot 5-under.
Who's
you
we?
And him.
Me and DeChambeau.
You and DeChambeau?
Yeah. I mean, he would almost never need one of my shots.
I think that's probably right.
But, yeah. You know, we'd probably go pretty low, I think.
Yeah.
Who is... Sorry?
Is this at Beaver Island or
anywhere? Anywhere.
Let's get him over to Delaware Park. I'll take a run at him.
I'd let him tee off on one.
See if we can get over those trees on two.
That'd be fine with me. Oh, two. I mean, how do you not lose a ball? Brian, who are a player or two that maybe this is the most important weekend for? What kind of, with Tiger over the years, and this is a long time ago now, but we would always have the same conversations about him before Ryder Cup. Like, is he really into it? And then he would often not be, he wouldn't have his A game often at Ryder Cup. Are there players like that here? I feel like it's, Europe is so solid and they've won so often. I read their roster and it's guys who I just think of as having great records at the Ryder Cup. I could be wrong though. I might just be sort of assuming that. And the home team has won the last five. So the U.S. has, you know, won their last two, played in the United States. Who are a couple players maybe this is the biggest for?
I think the U.S. I'm looking at what we would consider after Scheffler, the next set of big names that have not had good years. Shoffley, to me, if on paper, if you just said pure talent, I might pick him next. He had an injury to start the year, and then very, very disappointing after coming off of winning two majors last year. Like, I really thought, okay, Shoffley is now going to be like in that next tier after the, you know, Schefflers and the McIlroys of the world. But he really kind of had a quiet year. Colin Morikawa, who's also a multi-major winner, can he come through for them? And I think, I mean, there was an argument to be made that Morikawa shouldn't have even been on the team. Ultimately, obviously, Keegan Bradley valued his experience and him playing in pressure spots earlier in his career that he decided to get picked. So those two players, for me, on paper, because they have played in Ryder Cups before, like, can they come through here? Or do we kind of just get what we've seen before, which it sometimes is just kind of disappointing U.S. efforts from these players in these moments. Yeah, Tiger's record in Ryder Cups, not even close to what he's done individually. His singles record is decent, which, you know, I guess you'd say kind of fits his mentality, right?
Yeah.
Like, Tiger was always about beating the guy across from him when he had to really work together. A lot of times for his career, we always thought he was so, like, he didn't want to share secrets like he does now. Mm-hmm. Like, he talks with younger players. He was like, why am I going to share? He's like, I'm trying to beat him every week. So, that team mentality, embracing it, like when it was Woods and it was Mickelson, a lot of times you always kind of questioned, like, how on board are the U.S. with truly maybe, you know, being insightful with each other to have the best performance possible? And you're right, how much did they truly care? I mean, Tiger changed the way we watch majors now in golf because he made it all about those majors, and he raised those tournaments and those levels to the point where now – you know, like, those four have become marquee events on the sports calendar because of it. How much do they truly care about the Ryder Cup? We know the European players, at least publicly, say all the right things about legacy and that this is just as important. Some of them say it's even more important than winning a major if they can have a storied Ryder Cup career. So a little bit different spin on that. I know Luke Donald, even this yesterday during the opening ceremony, took kind of a shot at the U.S. because if you remember last year, it was Patrick Cantlay and a little Xander Schauffele talking about these players getting paid. And Donald's whole speech was about legacy and, you know, honoring the past and, you know, hoping that we're motivating the future and it's something that money can't buy, and kind of just a little dig at guys like Cantlay and Schauffele that, again, how are they going to perform this week? Maybe I'd throw Cantlay in that mix too. This is an important week for him because he was right at the front about getting paid. He was even the guy that took criticism for not wearing a hat. He didn't, you know, everybody said, oh, he's not a team player. He's not wearing a hat. Well, he said, oh, it didn't fit right. Like, I don't know. A lot of drama over that. But maybe I'll throw Cantlay in that mix to answer your question.
Even Scheffler, this is a while ago, and I don't think it pertained to the Ryder Cup, but I remember him saying once about legacy, like all the winning he's doing is like, yeah, in 100 years, nobody will care about any of this or remember any of us. So
right.
Big deal.
He said that during the season, maybe after winning a major, like he's just like, this isn't the most important thing in the world.
Not why I'm here.
Right. Brian, what did you
make?
Go ahead.
Real quick. And Europe has gone the other way. They have totally embraced the Ryder Cup experience, and Luke Donald this week have talked about in their locker room, in all their imaging and all their, you know, stuff that they have. It's the 4 years that Europe has won on a road Ryder Cup. They keep talking about that. Even this week, Europe's uniforms, for whatever it's worth, he said that they are drawing the four major colors that they used in the uniforms from when they won on the road. They are using that in their color scheme this week when they play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to try to inspire these guys to win on road soil. As you mentioned, the last five times, it's been tough to do it.
That's trying pretty hard. I mean, it sounds clashy, too, by the way. But you're going to look at the four random colors like, oh, yeah, those are the four jackets we wore in 1995. Yeah.
I don't know anything about the four colors, but the plum-colored quarter zip that Donald is wearing on TV right now, I'm going to tell you, I like the color of that.
You're a plum guy?
I don't think I've ever thought of myself as a plum guy. I'm just saying I like the look of that.
All right.
I don't know if it would look good on me.
Well, don't they have to sort of rule out red and blue immediately? Or they have the light blue. Europe, like the European flag, but
I mean the European flag's got the royal blue and the stars, but they seem to have a little bit more liberty to flex the color wheel. You're right. The U.S.
We can't wear green.
Although to be honest, like they've definitely embraced that, and obviously it's for marketing and merchandise and selling. But if you probably one of the most memorable moments in Ryder Cup history in our lifetime, guys, was that Justin Leonard. You know, what was that, 99, right?
Brookline,
where he's running all over the 17th green.
Yeah.
Yes, and they're wearing the most, probably the most hideous uniforms ever, and there's no red, white, and blue in those. They were like, what, purple and olive green and black, and it was a weird setup that week with uniforms for sure.
Might be time to go back to it.
Everything is red, white, and blue for the U.S.
Right. I wanted to ask you if you had a reaction, assuming you heard or read Brandel Chamblee's comments about Bryson DeChambeau heading into this. I mean, we work in radio to a large extent. I can appreciate a hot take, but it has to be somewhat accurate to really make the cut. What did you feel about the things that Chamblee said about captains? Nightmare, he's only here promoting his YouTube channel, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chamblee definitely is a hot take person for sure. He is definitely from the get-go. Anything that has to do with LIV, he has been negative from day one, so all the way through. So I think while others have maybe softened their stance, I guess I will give him credit in the sense that he right away was anti-LIV, and all the way to the end, if it's anything to do with LIV, he's anti that. So I guess I can say he's consistent in that message. Mm-hmm. He definitely thinks that, you know, these guys are all about making the almighty dollar and promoting themselves, not for the good of the game. And he probably feels like DeChambeau with his YouTube channel and doing all that sort of stuff kind of is in that lane. This is obviously all about team events, and I think, you know, if you watch Golf Channel's coverage all week, I think they do an amazing job with covering this event, but it's a lot of over-analysis about team and together and all that sort of stuff. And for whatever reason, they feel like that Bryson doesn't fit that mold well. I'm sure if you ask U.S. players, maybe some of them would be, if you got them off the record, maybe lukewarm on what Bryson brings, but there's some of them I feel like he's just one of the rest of them too. So I guess with Chambly, I'm sure part of it is he's looking to get a reaction. And for Bryson, I know he commented on it and said, oh, did Brandel say anything or did he say something or something like that? So he's looking to deflect that too. But for Chambly, I guess it's on brand. He's been anti-Liv and any player that's took the money from Liv right away, and he's sticking hard with that shtick the whole way through.
Brian, I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to watch this thing and look for you.
Good luck. There's going to be Good a luck. Lot of people there.
What? Hey, before you go today, I hope we get a chance to visit with you tomorrow. Well, if you can fit it in. Yeah. What's the weather? I mean, it looks like it's been pretty wet and windy today, but of course they're not playing until tomorrow morning.
Yeah, they moved the opening ceremonies where the two players, it's more of the pomp and circumstance sort of thing. They introduce everybody, they have music, and they moved that from what is normally the day before the Ryder Cup. They did it yesterday. Some of the players actually said they liked it better because they thought today they could focus a little bit more on prepping for the golf tournament and getting themselves ready to go. And maybe it's less longer of a day for them with all the commitments that go with it. I think in terms of the weather, today is the worst day. It looks like, I've been checking Farmingdale, New York's weather all week, it looks like it's just going to be cloudy tomorrow morning. And then Saturday, Sunday at this moment, Saturday looks to be like partly sunny. And then Sunday, it said like a slight chance of showers. But I don't know if that's an all day sort of thing. I think they're hoping that maybe the worst weather of the week was today.
Thank you again, Brian. Enjoy the trip.
Thank you. And by the way, I dropped the ball because I thought of this like 10 minutes before we came on the air. I know normally we have our pick 10 for the majors. We should have taken the 24 players and drafted 8 each and see who gets the most points. And I apologize for even saying this on the air right now, but we dropped the ball. We should have done that. But
yes.
I don't know. Is it too late to do it off air? I don't know. But
too late?
We should have incorporated that going forward for Ryder Cups. But
tonight. If we did it on like a DM thread or something, I could do it. I'd be
we
in.
We could. 8 picks each.
I hate to pull Bulldog away from Tulsa King.
That's right.
But this is my town now.
If we can do it, I'm definitely game for it.
This is my town.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. I'll be in if you guys are in.
Okay.
I feel at a disadvantage because I haven't really done a lot of homework on this thing.
Same here.
I'll stop that now.
You think Brian will just give him the money without even playing?
Right.
Just give Brian the money? Should we just give Brian the money?
It's Brian's Venmo. Let's just give him some cash.
Brian's out there like, oh, I have a great idea. Let's bet people golf. Let's make golf bets with people. Because I should win.
Right.
That's brilliant. Seattle, Arizona tonight. That's where I'll be set up. You know, Seattle has beaten Arizona 7 times in a row. You probably don't even think they've played 7 times.
Well, they're in I know they're in a division together, so that's hard to overlook that. So twice a year, yeah,
7 in a row for the Seahawks. Mike Schoeb and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. The Bills and Saints have not played that many times, but they will play this Sunday. Only the 6th meeting in Orchard Park between the Saints and Bills, and the Saints have won 4. Of the previous 5. If they win Sunday, that will be a story. Back after the update, we'll look for your calls too. This is WGR.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think coach always talks about it, mindset and the ball and taking care of the football. That's my main job and doing whatever I can do to not hurt ourselves, not put us in worst situations. I'm trying to take it one play at a time. And, you know, at the end of the day, each and every play, you know, doesn't need to be a home run. But as long as we're taking singles and, you know, finding completions and staying in front of the sticks and scoring points, you know, can't argue with the results.
Josh Allen saying the things. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio joins us in half an hour. The Sabres play tonight in Detroit. We'll have pregame at 6. So far, so good.
Yeah, sure enough.
Keep it going. Whatever it's worth in the preseason, you know, better than losing, I guess. Bills offense, 4th in the league in points, 20th in points allowed. Or Bills, you know, defense is 20th in points allowed. Can't blame the offense for that. Singles as opposed to home runs. This is the way now, isn't it? This is the league now. The Bills are right at the front of the line. And it makes sense, and I was talking to Matt Collar about this on his podcast today. I probably have said it in here. I think with that, I mean, you've got what? Teams built smaller defenses to be better against the pass, and then teams started running the ball on them, and teams even with great quarterbacks are just not throwing like they did 5 years ago. And the Bills are a perfect example of this. And they're, you know, like Allen says, the results, they're winning this way too. I think there's also likely to be a fourth down, go for it kind of correlation here. Because if you make it 4 downs instead of 3, then you don't need as many yards early in the count, if you will. Like you can sort of strategize for that. It's 2nd and 8. As Allen put it, I'll take a single. Now I'm 3rd and 4. I'm doing this in 2 plays. I mean, field position matters for this.
Sure.
But it's just all the more reason, not that this is great for the watch of it, I think, but all the more reason to just be conservative.
Yeah.
And you'll end up with longer drives in theory that, you know, don't get undone by turnovers. The Bills are great at avoiding those. And here you go. I mean, even without Allen for throwing for more than 200, barely more than 200 yards a week, they're still scoring like crazy.
Yeah, I think it. There's a lot of different ways to look at it and a lot of different ways to say it and try to explain it. But I think in a certain way, the Bills, I think, have arrived at, we don't think you are going to mount 4 long scoring drives on us. We are pretty confident we will do that to you. And somewhere along the way, when you're trying to do that, you're going to make a mistake. We trust that we're not going to. And that's the Miami game in a nutshell. I mean, was it closer for a while in the second half than a lot of us would have liked? Was it uncomfortable at times? Yeah, but they were never behind. And I think we're just sort of, okay, we got it. You know, we got it. We got this quarterback. If we need to make plays late, like if Miami doesn't rough the punter and they go down and get a touchdown and go up by 7 with 2 minutes to go or something. Okay, Josh, go get down there and score. Now, you know, you're going to have to decide on a 2-pointer or overtime or whatever. And again, that's a close shave and you're leaving yourself vulnerable to if you do make a mistake or if they don't make a mistake, then maybe it gets tight. But I mean, teams make mistakes, especially inferior opponents. And the Bills have lived on that. You know, it is razor thin at times, but they're pretty comfortable with it, I think. They've become a team that's very comfortable playing that way, even if we're not comfortable all the time watching it because, you know, it's oh, I'm only ahead by 4, you know, which is, you know, one play puts you behind. I get it. But they are just very, I think, confident in playing it slow, I guess is one way to say it.
Yeah, it's just, in theory, again, it's the kind of thing that will keep lesser teams in the ring with you. Like, if Sunday's game is like that, and the Bills just sort of systematically, you know, win by 10, something like that, nothing, no kill shots, no home runs, no, you know, blowout game or anything like that, I wonder if everybody will be impressed, right? Like, it is tempting to want them to
just put a hammer on someone.
Just,
right? Yeah.
Go deep.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
It is tempting to want that. But go deep is low percentage. And sure, that's high reward. But now I'm in 2nd and 10. And I need a good play on second down.
Right. We talked back in the summer, we talked about this. The point you just made at the outset of this conversation about fourth down impacting how you call the game, how your offense plays. And the Bills are the leading rushing team, yards per game, in the league. I don't know about all the advanced metrics and yards per carry and yards after contact and all that, but they're running the ball for more yards in games than any other team in the league right now. And they have the benefit of, again, feeling like they can play that way. And I think in part the fourth down stuff is baked into that. You know, I'm not going to, like you just said it, I'm not going to worry that much about third and four, because that's two running plays if I want it. And sure, if I get stuffed on the first one, fourth and four might end up being a punt instead of going for it. But if I get a couple of yards there and I'm at like midfield or better, I'm probably going anyway and I'm going to get it, you know? So it I give them a lot of credit. I know we were, worried about – you were more worried about it than me because I didn't think it was really going to happen. But you were right. They Brady took over. They became this run-heavy team that divested themselves of Diggs, and they've become run-heavy. And it's a thing that's keeping them at the top of the heap here. Like Kansas
– Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
City could run the ball at all, maybe the rest of their stuff would work that much better. But they just cannot get anywhere on the ground. Mahomes is their leading rusher. I mean, what are you doing? So the Bills, I think, maybe saw the curve changing and got in front of it, and they've got results to back up their plan.
Let's get to Tom here. Go ahead, Tom.
How you doing, guys? Good afternoon.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Hey, I want to put up an analogy, Mike, to what you just said as far as the home run versus single. I'm going to compare it to baseball. You know, you got a strikeout pitcher. Guy gets struck out, he's done. You got a guy who puts the ball in play, and anything can happen. And I compare that to the long ball versus the dink and dunk stuff. It's working, thank God. I mean, it's ingrained in all the players' heads. The ball is it. Do not lose the ball. But that's my comparison to it, where there is more risk, I think, in my opinion, and having a 16-yard play drive versus a three-play drive with a 45-yard bomb. Just my thoughts. I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the thing about the always avoiding the big plays, like it wasn't that long ago. I think maybe before last season, we heard McDermott talking about explosive plays, 20-yard plus plays, and what the data tells them that means to a drive, how a drive ends. Like the way larger percentage of drives that have all play of that nature in it result in points as opposed to ones that don't. So even if you are great at taking care of the ball, you are increasing the likelihood. Like if you got to run 12, 14, 16 plays like Tom is saying, you're increasing the likelihood that someone's going to get called for holding or someone's going to false start or illegal man down, whatever, a penalty is going to set you back or a negative play of some kind, a sack, a fumble, an actual turnover. Yes, teams do turn the ball over. The Bills don't seem to be capable of it, which is a good thing. But you are still increasing, the more times you're handling it, the more times there's a potential for something to go wrong. So I don't know. I don't want to just, as well as it's working, I think it would be comforting to see that they can do what they did at the end of the Baltimore game. Hit me with a 30-yard pass here and there. Like, just let everyone know you can do it. And it makes me feel good watching as a fan to know that you can do it, because I think it's helpful. I mean, to just get chunks of yardage instead of having to work so hard for it, because eventually you're going to make a mistake or two, and it's, you know, it could hurt you.
Thanks again, Tom. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. We'll be right back. Sal at 5. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.